There's two ways of being. There's you can behold your store of value in fiat, and you're going to be constantly vampirized. The vampires have their teeth in your neck, and they're sucking you dry without you really even noticing that it's happening. And I found it very frustrating that no matter how I express it, some people will just never get it. And so I thought, I can give you some Bitcoin, but you're not going to understand it. Or I can burn Bitcoin, and then some indirect way, I'm helping your descendants down the road.
Hey, everybody. This is the High Hash Rate Podcast. I'm Mike.
And I'm Dan.
And this podcast is just two plebs getting high and talking about Bitcoin, life, and the absurdity of the fiat world. Our guests don't necessarily get high with us, and you don't have to either.
But it helps.
All right. Welcome back to High Hash Rate. Tonight, we have a special guest, Mr. Spaceman. And what's kind of interesting about Spaceman is that when we came back, let me preface this a little bit. We sent out a tweet saying, basically, hey, we want to talk to anyone. Come reach out to us. And Spaceman was one of those dudes that, you know, was kind enough to lend us his time and reach out to us. So thank you very much, Spaceman, and thanks for coming on. And how are you doing tonight?
Amazing. It's a pleasure to be here. Looking forward to our conversation.
So yeah, he mentioned we kind of came back and we were getting new people to talk to, but one thing I'm noticing right now, and maybe I missed it last week, but it looks like we've got some sort of branded, podcast, frame or whatever going here on the video. Is that new, Mike? It's got the High Hash Rate logo.
Oh,
above
I see
your head.
It. Yeah.
It's like orange.
Okay, there it is.
So yeah. This is not, is this intentional or not? Cause it looks intentional.
No, look, Riverside has these options of putting, you know, logos and shit up on.
Okay.
Here.
Well, I like it. I'll
just throw it up there.
Spicing it up.
I'm trying to spice it up, you know, trying to get those views on the YouTube. You know what I mean?
So Spaceman, there's a ton of shit going on in Bitcoin, in politics, in the world. What's going on with you? Like how's your year been so far?
Well, I'm happy where Bitcoin's at. I've been in here for a while, and I've used Bitcoin since 2017. So right now I'm kind of living the Bitcoin nomad lifestyle, just living on Bitcoin. And
what did you do before you had Bitcoin and became a nomad?
I was a software engineer.
Okay. Like what kind of software were you working on? Do you have were you working for like a big company, startups? Like what was your,
I was a tools engineer for a software defined routing company, and they got acquired. After that I left.
Did you like your job?
I liked my job until we got acquired by a bigger company and didn't really like it after that. And
were you distracted by, were you on Bitcoin Twitter and like going through bull markets and like, fuck this bullshit. I'm going to go make memes and join, which you hang out with the Stack Chain. So exactly. You obviously got involved in the culture and in the group chats and the meme gangs or whatever on Bitcoin Twitter instead of doing your software engineering work. Is that what kind of where you're like, fuck this, I'm just going to go off. I'm just going to pursue this.
That's accurate. Yeah, it got to the point where, you know, I could keep doing this or I could do Bitcoin and go down
now,
this hole, see what comes out of just putting all my energy into Bitcoin and Stack Chain.
But Stack Chain probably doesn't pay as well as being a software engineer for a company that's got acquired. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe you're killing it.
Yeah, pay, but in terms of like the lucrative aspect, hey, it's worked out a little bit better than sitting and collecting a paycheck over the long term.
Go ahead.
You said you got involved in 2017. What was going on during that time that you sort of came into it?
Well, the group of coworkers I worked with, we were all fascinated by crypto, you know, so we would talk about the crypto that everybody was buying. And that was my kind of introduction to Bitcoin at first. And over time, I came to realize that everything but Bitcoin is a scam. And I kind of diverted from where everyone else was doing. It's like, I'm not going to do shit coins. I'm going to just buy Bitcoin and hold it. And
did you ever, after going, like, we're like, all right, this is all scams, I'm Bitcoin only. Do you ever get pulled back where you were like, oh, the meme coin thing, this is fun. So, I mean, I'm not saying like you're shit, like you're sugar. I'm just saying like, there's always little things. Like Mike talked about it. He likes the little pretty lady NFTs. He's not a meme. Love, he's not an NFT trader. He's not dumping on people, but he's got a weakness for a bunch of pretty girls in his NFT collection. He's a collector. He's a collector. And he likes to kiss his NFTs.
I'm an artist.
We talked about it, right? He's an exact. Okay. Yeah. Whatever. Right. But like, do you have, is any of it, like for me, it was like the DeFi shit before I finally gave it all up for good. And I was just like putting stable coins on there, getting 10% yield. I don't know. There's always something that attracts people, but is there anything that you're like tempted by that you're like, I gotta, cause it is hard. It's hard to stay. It's like, I always just have to remember, that I'm going to like lose a bunch of money if I fuck around with this. And that keeps me from going back.
Yeah. Yeah. I learned the lesson the hard way. You know, I had a portfolio of these shit coins, and it kind of opened my eyes to how I'm just buying someone else's money that they made out of nothing. And the whole purpose of it is for them to just take my Bitcoin. And so whenever I think, okay, you know, maybe Ordinals is cool. Is it interesting what they did with Bitcoin, but the NFTs are nothing.
Right. Right.
In my,
yeah, like we've talked,
value, you know?
Yeah. We talked about it before. Like, it's important, I think, to follow Ordinals, like watch what's going on with that and like understand what they're doing, because what they're doing impacts, then you have to know how to adjust. Like, some people run Bitcoin knots so they don't tax the computer, you know, their node. They're not like processing all this filter, you know, this bullshit that they don't want on their node. They're saving space. Like there's things that you can do and things that you should do and know how it's being used. But yeah, you don't have to trade the fucking the shit coins on there.
Yeah. It's a waste, you know. It's a distraction, and it causes pain. Unless you're the guy who's making it, then you're causing other people pain.
Before you ask your question, I was gonna say, but when you have friends and you're trying to orange pill your friends, and I think everybody's like, oh man, I hope my friend, I tell them not to get into shitcoins, right? But they, you know, a lot of them do anyway. But it's starting to seem like, I mean, most of us already knew this, but it's starting to become like a conscious thing that this is really just gambling. It's like not investing. It's what they're doing is gambling. And that's a big thing outside of Bitcoin, like the rest of the world. Everybody's got DraftKings. Everybody's like gambling on sports. So it's, should I try not to orange pill my friends who like to gamble and only, you know, because like this, they're going to fucking get rugged by Hawk Tua on a meme coin if I try to get them to buy Bitcoin right now.
It's good to warn them. And then let them learn the hard way if they must. But that warning will come back once they get rugged.
The hard way is always the way to learn, I suppose. I mean, that's how most of us
learn. Some people, yeah.
What was the hard way for you? You said you mentioned there was a hard, you learned your lesson the hard way. What was,
yeah,
that?
So when I got in 2017, I was going to buy everything, a little bit of this and that. And as I saw that, I just sat and watched and realized, okay, Bitcoin is the only thing that's really going to keep its value. And I thought, why? Well, because it's the only thing you have to actually work for. Everything else is printed out of nothing.
Oh, so that just occurred to you, this sort of idea?
It occurred to me because I lost a bunch of money on shitcoins.
You're like, oh, this is all, yeah. So did you, when you first got into Bitcoin, you were like doing this, you're buying everything, were you like, one of those people who knew, like, whether you studied economics or were interested in it, and you were like, all right, fiat, fuck fiat, they're printing money, inflation, central banking, and this is Bitcoin? Or was it like, oh, this is the bull market, Bitcoin's going up, I'm trying to get in on this? And then you did, so did you realize that the shit coins were fiat, or did you realize that everything that wasn't Bitcoin was fiat all at the same time?
It was a process over time. I didn't really dig into economics or how money or energy worked. I just kind of took for granted what I've been taught my whole life. And it was studying Bitcoin and learning about what I held and why I was holding it and why I wanted to keep it that I started to learn more.
Yeah, no, that's a lot. Cause like once you get a little bit down the rabbit hole, like you said, you took all this stuff for granted and you're like, holy shit, the most important thing in the world is energy. And I don't know shit about energy. I just take it for, then you're like, then the money and then the banking and then the bonds, how the bonds work and then how this grid work. And you're like, shit, that's a lot. That's a lot of shit I got to learn.
Yeah.
It's overwhelming a little bit. For that was how it was for me.
Yeah, it's eye-opening. You know, I don't know if I had not gone into Bitcoin, if I would have even bothered to learn how things really worked. I would just kept saying, oh, I got to get something. I got to invest in something that's going to grow. And all I could do is take advice from people I thought were smarter than me. I got to a point where my idealism for Bitcoin came from, I want something that someone else doesn't have a higher authority on. You know, so Bitcoin is the only thing that you don't have to ask permission and it can't be diluted.
So that sovereignty is a pretty important aspect to you.
Yeah, it's necessary. Like if you can't use it sovereignly, it's impossible for it to actually not be co-opted, not be controlled. You know, because Bitcoin can be used sovereignly, that gives it its strength, its real scarcity.
Right. And I think to my point, which was about like when you realize like, oh, there's so much that I don't know about these critical aspects of society or life. And so when I'm trying to talk to my friends or like somebody who's same situation, they probably are taking all this stuff for granted. And I'm like, oh man, like you have to understand the sovereignty, but I don't think they even understand what that word means. We take that for granted.
That's
and it's
true.
Like,
that's fucking
and it's
true.
Like, it's so, it takes you so long, so far, you know, so long and so much to learn before you're like, I need something sovereign. And you even start thinking about it and framing it that way.
Well, it wasn't until I got into this community that I understood how not sovereign I was, like how much I depended on all the shit around me. And then you start to hear dudes like Rev Hoddle and you're like, oh man, I'm like way the fuck behind here. I need to up my game a bit. But so I see that you're based on your tweets, Spaceman, based on your tweets, I can kind of guess that you're a maximalist.
I am a Bitcoin.
I preface you as a,
yeah.
Or I would categorize you as a maximalist. But I also see some conspiracy theory stuff, which I'm kind of interested in.
Yeah. Theory or just the awareness that there are conspiracies out there. And part of that is why I think Bitcoin's important. It's important for me because the control of energy, the control of money is the root of what makes these conspiracies possible. You know, the control over populations by being able to loot their money. I think that's the worst one. You know, if you can't steal people's money to fund stuff, to control them and to control narratives, control their minds, then
right, it's the
way.
It's kind of like, at least if from my experience, it's, you hear a lot of conspiracy theories, before you really get into Bitcoin or whatever, and even after maybe you get into it a little bit, And you're like, wow, that's interesting. But like, I just don't understand why anybody would do that. Or like that, like, why would anybody do, or why would people collude to do this? Or why would companies do this? It doesn't make sense. And then you start to realize like the game theory and the incentives of what they're doing and how it's all like this race to get the cheapest credit and debt in the, as the money printer is whizzing, because if you have to have that advantage. And so you kind of like you'll do anything to get it, and you'll set up, you know, you'll just follow this crazy incentive path that takes you to this clown world conclusion. And then once you understand money and like all this, the incentives behind money, and you follow the money, so to speak, you're like, oh, that doesn't even sound crazy anymore. Everybody thinks this is a crazy conspiracy theory. And I'm just like, no, that is what I would have predicted would have happened in this situation, because that is just the logical, rational way to do it once you understand the script that we're running on.
The clown world is funded by fiat. It is the way it is because fiat is printed for free. And so everything that stems from that is garbage.
Agreed. Do you think that the clown world is changing, or we're coming out of it? It's a question for both of you.
It's coming up against Bitcoin. That's the way I see it. It's like, okay, we're going to keep printing forever, but eventually people have an exit now. And so as more people take that exit, they keep rotating over, you know, the fear ops and the money printing. But that's only going to work as long as people continue to store their value in that imaginary paper currency.
Right. It's, you say like, it's what you think is happening is like the fiat system is butting heads with Bitcoin, but you could also frame it a bunch of different ways. And it's all saying the same thing, right? It's like in religion, they would say like the fire is going to pass over you and all that's left is your work and your deeds. Or you would say that like there's a reality hitting in, like it's, the clown world is running into energy constraints, market constraints, logistical constraints, trade, all this stuff is breaking down and it's all coming to a head right now. So like all that clown world, the DEI stuff, it's facing the fact that we can't just print money for this bullshit anymore. And so they're cutting stuff. They're not holding prisoners, man. They're firing. Who knows if all this is real or it gets kept up, but Europe's getting their ass chewed out. They're like, we're not funding the wars anymore. Canada, we're about to annex them because if they don't fucking pay their tariffs, everything's coming to a head. And it's going to happen the same way with the money system. The money system, the currency system, may be the last card to go or the last domino to fall, but it's all collapsing down into you're getting to the base of the problem, which is the money. And it seems like we're accelerating towards that conclusion.
Yeah, that feels right. But the thing I would say is that it for me, it feels a bit like, especially with the election of Trump, that we are headed into a direction of positivity. Now, that could be argued easily, I'm sure. You know, but I don't know, because of all this stuff that's surfacing, I don't know where, I'm kind of curious, like, what happens after, like, what do we bitch about?
I think after all this stuff gets exposed. I think I understand what you're saying, but I think you're making a mistake. I think that a lot of people are experiencing this like momentary relief where it's like, we are not accelerating the wrong way at full speed anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the acknowledgement that this ship has to start turning around and things have to start changing. It's like, there's that, like, all right, it's a good sign, but we're not just going back and like next month, things are going to be good. Like, this is going to be a painful, taking the medicine is painful. It's going to be painful.
Or not taking the medicine.
If we're like into Bitcoin, right? Like, a lot of us are prepared for this moment and we're better positioned for this moment, but it's not going to be like this jubilous, easy path from here.
So you think that there's some kind of thing headed for us still? Like, you think the pole shift is coming sort of deal.
Well, I think, I think that that's possible. I think that we haven't saw the big, you know, earthquake yet, and that we just kind of are prepared for it. It's coming. But also that, you know, like when the, what's it, when they say that, like the sun, when it dies, one of the things is it collapses and then it like expands out and it becomes this giant like fireball that like it's gonna ultimately will consume Earth when it does that. But it's like before it collapses back down and explodes. But well, like we're kind of seeing that now. It's like you think that everything's turned around and things are going well, but like the president of Argentina just meme coin rugged like a country, collapsing their economy. Trump's been doing it. Melania did it. There's going to be more of these meme coins. Dave Portnoy's involved. It seems like the shit coiners and the meme coiners are getting to the point where they're like disgusted with their own selves. That's how bad it's getting. But I think it's, we still got more to go.
It's a new class.
And we're in just like this weird, the clown world, the volatility of events is probably still getting crazier and crazier.
Yeah. These shit coins are self-defeating. You know, most people, their experience is just getting rugged. And
right, everybody's desperate.
Rugged forever, or they can look to Bitcoin, and that you can get rugged forever until you're destitute, or you can adopt Bitcoin, and that's kind of the natural process. Like Bitcoin will just win because right. It's stronger.
We're gonna have to go to a lot of people. I mean, right now, shit is bad, depending on where you're at in life or what country you're in. So people are like so desperate to be able to afford anything, to ever have a house, that they're going to gamble on every fucking opportunity. Like if I get in on fart dick coin, if I put in $100, you know, I might be able to get 10,000, 100,000, $1 million out of it. If I'm lucky, it's worth a shot. That's what they think. And it's, we're gonna have to go to them and be like, once they've lost all their money, be like, I told you so, to stop shit coining. Now listen, you know,
that really
time to start, it's time to start being orange pilled. You'd probably say it nicer, but
going to a casino.
Yes, that's exactly what I was going to say. That's that casino mentality. That's exactly what you walk into a casino, and you know that hey, I'm probably going to lose this money that I'm bringing in, the energy that I worked
right
to achieve.
They boast about it.
Lose it.
They boast about pissing their money down the drain, setting it on fire.
So you mentioned in one of your tweets, because I wanted to still dive into the conspiracy theory stuff, you mentioned that COVID was the new 9/11. What did you mean? What do you mean?
So,
I'm curious.
In my view, you know, 9/11, whoever did it, the point is, well, came out of it, we got the Patriot Act, we got locked down. Airports were never the same. And it was just this program of fear that led us down a certain path. And I see COVID as the exact same pattern. You know, we didn't get some towers bombed, but we got a bunch of people's health ruined and, you know, installed this program of fear that now you need pharmaceuticals, you need the government to use your tax money to pay for a vaccine or whatever. And it was a next level of stripping your rights away, essentially what we saw with COVID. And we're going to look back, right? And people, you know, with 9/11, is never forget. Keep remembering that you're in danger. And that's what COVID is. And you see it. It's COVID-19. How many years ago was that? But it's still a topic. And it's going to be a topic, you know, maybe as long as 9/11 was. And then they're going to come up with something new to keep people in that fear mentality.
So that's where I think where Mike was talking about is starting to feel like things are better. I agree with what you said about COVID and like what it was going to lead to, or like the outcomes and like the excuses to strip away liberties. And I think that, I mean, I think that happened at an incredible pace, especially 2020, 2021. It does feel like to me that is receding, and it feels like people, not all of them, but are starting to slowly, it's becoming a more mainstream thing that like COVID was a psyop. the vaccines are bogus at best, and malicious at worst, that it was created in the lab. It was some sort of malicious or just, something we don't want our tax dollars going to do is make these bioweapons, that's what it was. And it's like, maybe even people are going to start getting punished for this. So while I agree, all those things, bad things happened, and we're not going to get all of the rights back that we lost, it does seem like there's some sort of correcting measure happening right now. And people are hopefully on the path of taking some of the steps that's necessary to hold people accountable and kind of prevent some of the stuff from happening again. Again, like I said, I don't think we're going to get all of our rights back. That never works that way. But it doesn't seem like it's going to be as bad as, whereas 9/11, it was like decades of just bullshit that kept piling up and nobody acknowledged it.
Maybe the turnover on the false flags is getting shorter. So they need to come up with a new one before people wake up.
What do you think about, I think we're maybe, if it's some sort of relay race type thing, whatever COVID gave the government and the state an excuse to just, infringe on us and move in, and it's losing its power, AI is going to pick up and going to take the baton and be that tool that they use to creep into our lives. What do you think about AI, and how do you view that? And as well, it doesn't matter if it's good or bad, it's coming. So how do you think about it?
So the way AI is being presented to us and presented to in the mainstream is it's this, mostly what people think of when they hear AI is a chatbot, something they could talk to and give them information. And it's more of now we have a source of truth. We'll ask Grok or ask whatever. And, I talked to Grok, it's complete bullshit. It makes stuff up. All these things make stuff up. But what they want is people to go and ask and get their information from these sources now, because
yes.
Well, it's a computer. It's not going to lie to you, but it is.
Right. Well, here's where I think it's even worse and dark, is that what you were saying about, you go to this chatbot, you talk to it, and you get questions from it. And that is literally, yes, what is happening. But if you look even deeper, it's what was, the value and the power that made Facebook such a huge, early success in the social media giants and made Mark Zuckerberg a billionaire, is that it was convincing people to create these profiles, which are like dossiers. It's like, I live here. Here's all my pictures. Here's all my interests. Here's all the music I like. Here's all my friends. This is the entire web of who I am as a person and who I how I externally express myself. This is the entire profile. And now you connect that and you have all this data and you can just exploit the shit out of it if you are these big companies. And so what AI is doing is it's now taking your inner thought. It's reading your mind. So it's figuring out how you solve problems, what your concerns are, what you're scared of, what your anxieties are, if you're a hypochondriac, if you are, what your interests are and what you're curious about. And it's mapping this. And so when you say it wants you to come and get all of its answers, yes, but it's also going to be one of the best resources to find out a lot of important things, a lot of valuable things. And you're going to go to it. Most people are going to go to it because it's going to be the best thing to ask about or, to go learn from. And then even if it tells you 99% of the correct information, even if they get it, whenever it needs to tell you the wrong thing and to lead you astray, it will. And you're going to, you're like, well, that's the best source of information I've got. So whatever that's saying, I'm going to assume is true, and I'm gonna kind of follow. And it is this tool that they can use, but we're gonna be so, it's gonna be such a hard addiction to break,
right?
It's gonna be so hard to get figured out.
It can, what happens on the back end with all the data that we're giving up through social media, just operating online, and it can manipulate you perfectly in real time. So it knows what to say and what not to say for you specifically. And it's a master at it because it just talks to a million people, figures out how to get them to ask certain questions, what will click, and it's going to master manipulation.
Exactly. And it's going to do just like the scammers on Bitcoin Twitter. You're going to get these AIs that are going to be like, I like Bitcoin, buy my shitcoin advice. It's gonna use your passion for Bitcoin to try to win your trust. It's gonna tell you, people are gonna ask, what do you think about Bitcoin, ChatGPT? And they're gonna be like, some are gonna be like, it's gonna tell me it's a waste of energy. But no, it's gonna be like, this is a really good form of money that could potentially be the global reserve currency someday. It's the only crypto that is real. The rest of it's fiat. And you're like, wow. And then it's gonna tell you to go get the next booster for COVID. Until it figures out that you don't like that either. But it's, you know, it's going to use your interest against you. You're going to expect it to be adversarial to Bitcoin, and it's going to pretend to not be.
That makes me think of a question, like, what would be the alternative to that technology coming into the world? Because if
you're going to tell people not to use AI because it's a fucking psyop or whatever, not to trust AI, you got to give them something that's a better solution.
Yeah.
And is there a better solution?
So far, well, like there's I think that what you have out there, if you look in the open source and you really dig in, the pieces are there for someone who wanted a sovereign AI that isn't having biases baked in and isn't controlled by, you know, narrative controllers. You can say, okay, I'm gonna go ask this a question. It's gonna use reasoning and real facts to give me a good answer instead of going through with the number of filters that you have somebody at these companies saying, okay, now there's this list of things the AI is not allowed to tell us about.
Right. It's the open source component to like the models and how to decentralize that stuff is important. But then there's also the way that those things learn, you can use the algorithm to like not filter facts or whatever, but it's learning based on like all the information it consumes. So like they're gonna astroturf the internet with bullshit to try to trick your even, you know, open source, allegedly, you know, smarter, like you're gonna try to program against it, but they're still gonna be trying to throw it against you. Like you might not even be able to trust your own. You're going to have to verify your own AI model.
Yeah. And
it's crazy.
You have to verify voices online. Is this a real person?
Right.
Or is this just an AI pulling the strings out here?
That's a nuts future to think about. When you really, really open that up and you really start to think like who are the people that I'm even looking at online? Are they even real? Are the experiences that I'm watching even real?
It gets down to we're already there, but it's going to get to a point of how do I know anything is real? How do I know anything is true? Anything? How do I verify any information? If I can't go outside and, you know, and touch it, know it's a rock myself, anything I see on a screen, any information I hear or see out of a device, how do I know if that's real? It's going to be,
yeah,
I don't know. It's going to change. It's going to be difficult.
In my experience, you know, I'll bring up StackChain. For me, that was a way of saying who's really out here buying Bitcoin and who's just a voice to spread a narrative, because you see people say, I'm in this. I've really owned Bitcoin. I'm really buying Bitcoin. I'm someone who I thought, you know, people say they're Bitcoin maximalists, but then they'll say, I'm all in on ETFs. And that doesn't check out for me. But when I look at the stack chainers, I think these people, I listened, I've been with them for a few years now, and there's been some fakers, but I've met some really genuine Bitcoin enthusiasts through that kind of method. I see it as a method of filtering out the noise.
So just to give a brief, you know, explanation for anyone new coming into the space or listening, what is StackChain and what's
StackChain
your involvement?
It started as a Twitter thread where somebody bought $5 worth, and then we decided a 6, 7, 8, 9 down to, you know, 2,000 something dollars worth of Bitcoin. And it's like, oh, we're taking this to self-custody and we're buying. We started in the bear market a few years ago. It was really a whirlwind of an experience to be in a Twitter thread of people openly saying we're not doxing our stacks necessarily, but we're doxing, hey, we are real Bitcoiners.
Yeah, okay. That is I'm glad you brought that up, because that was one of the, you know, some people who would dunk on StackChain or dismiss it. It's like that's one of the things they'd be like, oh, they're doxing themselves, or they're showing, oh, I use Strike, or I do this, and this is how much Bitcoin I'm buying, yada, yada. But what you're saying was that was kind of the point. It was like, I'm willing to put myself out there, and I'm willing to put it out there. Whatever risk that may come to me for this, I don't care, because it's important to me. Like, this is what I'm fighting for.
Exactly. It went against the ethos. There was a lot of pushback saying, you know, you're doxing your stack. That's not the Bitcoin ethos. Don't talk about your stack. So we broke the rules there, because for everyone had a different reason, but for me, it was because I wanted to find the real Bitcoiners.
Yeah.
I thought there's a lot of people out there that talk about Bitcoin that don't have any.
The StackChain, I don't know, community, you guys, like, there's a magazine now. Catch us up, like, what kind of grew from that original StackChain, from that thread? And then it was like people, you know, would have stuff in their bios. It was like a meme gang, almost like a 58K gang. Mm-hmm. Not as cringe, or more cringe, depending on your opinion.
Yes.
And it became like, kind of walk us through that from your experience, like how that grew and what it became and what it is now.
Yeah. You know, we had this, the first 1,000 blocks. Okay. Blocks are 1, 2, 3. It's the post. Like, hey, I bought this much.
Oh, that's a blocker.
It was quite an exciting time. And we decided, hey, we're going to keep doing this. We're going to get together. You know, we met up at conferences to people, you know, people you chat with online. So it's very much like a meme gang. There's memes. And we went through pretty much what everybody would expect. You know, people come in and take advantage of your transparency and the openness of it. We run into a lot of different characters through that maybe not otherwise, but at the same time, that right now there's dozens of people that continue to be passionate about this project. You know, like the magazine, we're on the 6th episode of this magazine, where it's just plebs writing articles. Anybody can come in, and it's I'm not as involved in that part of it as I was just in the thread, but I still collect them. And
yeah, I've got an edition. I got to remember which one it was upstairs. But what about once you kind of had this movement that was going, and StackChain had basically taken off? So I think I posted I tried to get in the StackChain a couple times, and I'm in one of the forked, you know, threads that isn't in the official StackChain, but people who wanted to come and be a part of StackChain, who were just kind of, like you said, like maybe LARPers or scammers even, or just somebody who's just like trying to use the platform just for very selfish, not real reasons. How do you like filter that out? How do you keep that community strong when you've got all these crazy branches that are like kind of claiming to be StackChain, but they don't really represent you?
We fork them. You know, so if a shitcoiner comes and says, you know, I'm going to buy this block, and they start buying blocks, we'll say, no, you're not on it. And we're going to fight you so that you can't be on the chain.
Yeah. Have you ever had anybody come in like .eth retards and like, they're like, we're the wrapped Bitcoin stack chain and we are going to get in on this block as a wrapped Bitcoin transaction. And you're like, fuck you. You're not compatible.
You know, we had one shitcoiner try once and we forked them. But as it turns out, there's not a whole lot of conviction. There's not a whole lot of passion to evangelize when you're a shitcoiner. They kind of just want to pump their bags. And there's not as much cohesion because everyone's got their own shitcoin bag they want to pump. And so that's kind of what I didn't think stack change really possible outside of Bitcoin, because there's not that cohesion. You don't see people saying, I'm going to stack ETH. And now these days there's all kinds of stacking groups on Twitter.
Well, all the ETH, yeah, all the ETH stack chains would be sharded.
Yeah.
It's still going on? The stack chain is still happening?
Still going on. We reached block height 2,500 just recently, which means, you know, you got
to. That means to get on that, you have to buy $2,500 worth of Bitcoin?
Yeah, to get onto the main chain. We have any number of side chains that people have come up with to say, oh, and you know, we still want to participate, but we don't have $2,000 to throw around just for one Twitter post. So they come up with, like, there's one.
They all combine.
It's a whole system to it. So people will create a side thread where they start off at some other amount, and they're usually themed based off of the memes people want to make. And once they get the amount that they bought that sums up to a whole block, sometimes they'll say, let's put it all together and post it to the main chain. So it's a way of sharing memes at the same time as continuing to stack.
Is that like stack join? Is that what that is?
Stack joins. Yeah. Stack joins is one of them. Side chain are kind of what's driving it right now. There's micro stack chain where instead of the dollar, we started at a penny, and it's more about the memes. And then there's coffee chain. That's a big one that's been going for a long time. Music chain.
That sounds like stack chain ordinals. Like they're like doing their own like memes that they're combining on their blocks with, like, they're basically referencing something on the main chain and then trying to say that they're a little meme community. Yeah, it's not as bad because it doesn't make my node overheat, but
100%. It was just an organic outcome from all the fights we had about how we're going to stack on the main chain, and people said, I'm just going to stack over here because I like the idea and I like stacking with my friends. So I'm going to do like an OG chain that doesn't even go on to the main chain anymore. And that one's going to.
It's crazy because I muted, because like I said, I was on a fork of the chain, but whatever, I would still be in the mentions of the stack chain. So everybody, you know, it was a big thing. It was like, all right, I got to mute stack chain because it's just going to puke my or flood my mentions. If you don't have that, I want to put it in the show notes. So how do we find the original stack chain post, like the Genesis post? So somebody can go back, because there's so much shit on here. If you just follow the stack chain, right, and you can find all the different forks and blocks and everything, that is there's like just a huge index of crazy memes through stack chain's history. And that's really interesting. And how could people start finding that?
Yeah, the history is in our hearts now. Most of the blocks have been deleted. You know, I deleted my original account that I stacked on.
Oh, yeah.
And not, you know, because it was fun at the time. And the memes, it's more of just like a legend now that we look back.
Interesting. On. The memes probably still exist, right?
Yeah.
The memes are what persist.
The memes come back.
Yeah.
At times.
That's crazy, because that's like, there's like evidence for all kinds of geological or things that happened in history, right? But like not really anymore. Most of it's gone or washed away or eroded away. The only thing we have for most of like a history at a certain point in the past is the lore, the memes, the stories, the biblical stories, the whatever religious text from back then. So that's what's already what's left of some of the stack chain. It's just the memes, but they'll keep evolving in time. Yeah.
We get together. We're planning a get together again. We've kind of like forked conferences to gather and just have that Bitcoin community.
Did you go to the halving party in El Salvador?
That was the one I missed. Okay. I heard it was great. There was a lot of stack chainers there that I know and I've met in other places, out in Pacific Bitcoin and Bitcoin conference, but haven't yet made my way to El Salvador. Haven't done that pilgrimage.
It's dope. You should go for sure. Especially now that it's before it completely like tetherizes or whatever. But no, you know, I make fun of it, and it's easy to, cause the headlines that it's like, oh, Bukele's giving into the IMF or the shitcoiners. But man, a lot of people criticize the top down, like Bitcoin legal tender laws force everybody to use it. Really, it forced the banks to learn it for the people. But it's like, all right, you can't force people to use Bitcoin. At least that's not the ethos to it. But at least Bitcoin, or at least El Salvadorans, went from like the shittiest place in the world to have like this opportunity to, like, a bunch of people brought Bitcoin to them, educated, and not all of them want to use it. But a lot of them have had the opportunity, and a lot more use it now than they ever would have before. And I think a lot of the positive changes that Bitcoin brought to El Salvador and built in those people, they didn't go away just because they took the legal tender law away. So I think it's still a very Bitcoin friendly and nice place. You know what I mean?
It birthed an entire tourist, right, attraction. You know, no one really knew that El Salvador was like a country out there. You know,
right. Nobody has to use Bitcoin in El Salvador anymore, but everybody can.
Yeah, it's always been opt-in.
I had something to add to that previous conversation, which made me think about when we were talking about the gangs. And now that I think about it, like, you know, what we know about gangs in the past, like, you know, dudes late at night going out, causing a ruckus or doing whatever they do, tagging stuff up, and how that could sort of bifurcate or split off into different factions because one dude thinks he's gonna, you know, get better than the boss. But it's so interesting that it always starts from this sort of root tree, and it branches off in those kinds of ways. And even in this digital world, or in stack chain itself, you know, you have these infinite amounts of branches that just keep on going out and going out and going out. I just think it was interesting.
Yeah, it expands fractally.
Yeah,
for sure.
Exactly. What are you kind of getting into now, or like, what is stack chain working on? Any like new creative branches, so to speak, like branching off?
Right. So I think one of the most exciting things that's coming out of like this creative community is the Stack Chain magazine. I haven't personally submitted my articles to it yet. I just read it. I read about it. In terms of
what are some of your favorite articles? Like, what would be is there any
my favorite
theme
article
to all of them, or is they all different?
Everyone writes. It's kind of an open, you know, write about whatever you want. Because we tap Bitcoiners to write. And my favorite, the one that's most dear to my heart is in episode 2, the Burn Chain article that was written by V. Did a great job. The Burn Chain is another offshoot, kind of a side chain to Stack Chain, and something completely independent at the same time, because it follows a whole different, we're not really buying, we're burning Bitcoin there. It's kind of a thought experiment / let's just see what this is and see what comes of it when we do it.
Wait. You're burning Bitcoin?
Yes.
In the chain?
Yes.
What does that mean? Like you're sending it to an address that is no longer, that you'll never see again?
Yes. There's Ooh, that's different a, ways of burning like it, but.
So nihilistic.
That is a common reaction.
Is there a ritual to it?
About it? There is. It Man. Is very ritualistic. You know, you can wow. do an op return and pick a certain number of sats and say, I'm going to permanently mark this chain, this supply to say, I took some sats off the table for all of humanity for all time, and there's nothing you can do to undo that.
And it's also, you know, I don't know, maybe nobody has thought this or felt this when they've done it, but when you have Bitcoin, like something you're always cognizant of or afraid of is like, what if I fuck up the address and send it to the wrong ad and then I lose my Bitcoin and when I'm trying to do a transaction? Or what if I lose, you know, something, or I accidentally send it to a burn address with the op return, or I mess something up and I lose it, or I just somehow fuck up my ability to have access to the Bitcoin that I've saved in the future? Because it is kind of scary, especially if you don't use, use your own node and like actually send a transaction yourself. A lot of people don't do that very often. To do, it's almost like it would spell away that demon or something, like to do it on purpose, just a little bit to like, I know I, this is how you, this is how you burn Bitcoin. And this is how I won't do, you know, a transaction in the future because I don't want to burn my Bitcoin, something like that.
Yeah, it definitely brings those questions to mind. It's a very thought-provoking practice. And that was kind of the point of it, because it was to say, okay, we've been stacking and now we're memeing. And how can we take this to a new level, something completely different? And I saw that burn chain as an opportunity to do that. And it really, you know, within the stack chain community, definitely rose a lot of discussions.
Yeah.
Which was part of what I loved about stack chain so much.
Yeah. So stack chain in it of itself, when it initially started, was kind of this counterculture, rejecting the consensus, like of, you know, what's how to be a good Bitcoiner or whatever, just by posting it, right? And then you've got this thing with like the burn chain. This show we constantly talk about, like, how do you talk about Bitcoin to other people? How do you get other people who aren't exposed to Bitcoin interested in Bitcoin? But there's not enough attention maybe to how do, and like what you're doing, how do you provoke thought? How do you, get people to think differently about Bitcoin? Like, how do you consider yourself like a troll or like an artist or like what? How do you think about it?
There's some troll aspect. I like to think of myself as like a starter. I have an idea, I propose it, and I show it and see, is there interest? Do people want to join me?
Yeah.
What do the people think about it? So maybe I'm a provocateur. I provoke people to think.
Sure. Do you know who John Carvalho is? Bitcoin Aerolog.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't do as much anymore, but he would like start these morning keeper. He would say, and it was usually something pretty factual about Bitcoin, but he would always frame it in a way that would be very provocative and piss people off and go against the narrative. And he would just get people arguing in his thread with him. And it was, you know, you ask him why he do it. He's like, well, you know, if I piss you off and troll you and provoke you a little bit with this question or this idea, if you want to tell me I'm wrong, you've got to go look at some code or you've got to go do some research. It's forcing people, it's like pissing them off and saying, I want to prove you wrong, and forcing them to go study or learn something that they didn't understand before, because they wouldn't have gotten mad if they understood what he was saying. So it's kind of like that, where it's Bitcoin is for anybody and anybody can do anything they want with their Bitcoin, including burn it forever. And there's nothing you can do about it. And I'm going to make a meme about it, and I'm going to make a reverse stack chain about it, and we're going to fucking celebrate burning Bitcoin, and there's nothing you can do about it. You have to watch. If you see it on Twitter, you have to read about it.
Yep, you had to sit and watch, and it was just another thing where I kind of had a little bit of like, oh, I missed that, pissing everybody off with Stack Chain, but now it's, people aren't pissed off about it, they just muted it, so
right,
let's piss off the Stack Chainers.
How can we piss off people again?
Yeah, piss them off and say, you know, make them think I'm a nihilist, and then question, well, I know he's not, so why is he doing this?
Because really the action is to provoke thought, right? That's really what you're trying to do, is to get people to wake up and to think about what they're looking at and what their daily activities are.
Yeah, and it had the effect, and it was really for me, because when I do it, I have to decide, why am I doing this? And I think, well, what are the outcomes? And over a long term, you know, 1,000 years from now, it'll make, you know, you won't see the difference, but I know it makes a difference. Because I'm not going to be the one holding that Bitcoin 1,000 years from now, but what I burned, I still maintain control of that 1,000 years after my death. Like, my will is enforced upon the chain in a way that you can't do any other way besides burning.
I've configured some UTXOs on the blockchain that you can never change. You will never be able to reorganize or spend those without a ton of energy.
Yeah. And it's what it is. It compresses the energy that we put into Bitcoin. I think of Bitcoin as like a big balloon. And when you burn it, you are contracting, you're adding more pressure to it.
I've never heard that. That's an interesting image that you just pointed out. I've never heard it described that way.
Because it's a store of energy. We're all putting our energy into this network. Because, well, for me, I believe it's the way to free yourselves from the fiat parasite. And I don't think the fiat parasite's just going to die because of a president. I think it's going to die because every individual is awakened to it and makes the choice not to participate anymore. So it's going to happen. It's going to be generations. It may never go away as long as humanity is around.
Right. Of course. And go ahead.
Have you always been this inclined to, you know, wanting to expose the fiat parasite or just diving down some sort of rabbit hole, or has that just happened when Bitcoin came into the picture?
I took it personally when I began to see that there's two ways of being. There's, you can behold your store of value in fiat, and you're going to be constantly vampirized. The vampires have their teeth in your neck, and they're sucking you dry without you really even noticing that it's happening. And I found it very frustrating that no matter how I express it, some people just never get it. And so I thought, I can give you some Bitcoin, but you're not going to understand it. Or I can burn Bitcoin, and then some indirect way, I'm helping your descendants down the road to...
Yeah, instead of you are... A lot of people, from their perspective, it's like somebody's coming to them and saying, buy this thing that I already own so you'll pump my bags. I'm telling you, this will be good for you and it'll be great for you, blah, blah, blah. But you've got to spend some money to benefit me and you. And what you're saying more, like what you're doing is a more of this like selfless act. It's like, listen, I'm willing to burn real value to get your attention, to let you know, like, as I'm doing this, if you bought it, this would benefit you in the future. But I'm not asking you to pump my bags. I'm burning to kind of show you, like, skin in the game. Like, I want you to listen to what I'm saying.
Yeah, it demonstrates the scarcity and the quality of the scarcity, that when you think, okay, you burn some dollars, they can just print some more. But you burn some Bitcoin, that's never coming back. And it does get people to think, or it gets people to stack sometimes. But you don't really know the effect of what you do. Like, not even 10% of the impact of what you're doing actually comes back to you in a way you can observe.
Right. And it's if you have whatever, a short amount of time to be somebody's first touch point into what Bitcoin is, some people try to get them to buy right away, or they try to give them sats, but what you're really doing is you're trying to pique somebody's interest in whatever it is they're going to check mark in their mind. And then they're going to go back to it and think about it later. And they're going to continue to go down the rabbit hole. Some people get 1 inch into the cave. Some people end up going all the way to, you know, the theoretical bottom. But whatever you're doing, it just seems illogical on the face of it. Somebody's trying to pitch you their bags. Of course, they hear it. Everybody's trying to sell them something every day. They're just going to tune that out. But then you do something where they're like, why are you doing that? And some people will get mad. Why are you burning your money? And then they might dwell on it all day because they're pissed at you. They think you're an idiot for burning money. But now they're thinking about the scarcity of Bitcoin. And next thing you know, they might be down the rabbit hole themselves.
Yeah, that's the hope. That's kind of the idea of it, is when you see something and, you know, you can talk, people will talk the ear off about Bitcoin all day. But if you see someone actually take an action with real money, which is kind of the concept behind StackChain, is you can say, oh, buy, buy, buy. You can say, give people reasons to buy. But if you show them that you're buying and you invite them to do it with you, there is a real compounding effect that happens, because people get emboldened. Courage is contagious. And so if you demonstrate something, that's really the best way, in my opinion, to get someone to do something, is to demonstrate it for them.
That's a great point. Yeah, Spaceman. Mike, did you have any final questions or any other things you wanted to get to that you're taking notes on over there?
I did, but then it lost me. I did want to ask you about your name.
Sure.
And where did you get the names?
So the name, I'll just tell you, I made up Spaceman just because I kind of wanted to distance myself from the old name I used on StackChain. My next stack chain name was Skinner, and then I had another name I didn't name myself these things. I like to let people name me, and then I decide to just play that part. So someone called me Skinner, someone called me Burntoshi, and so I played those roles online for a little bit. And now I'm Spaceman because my interest now is, how can I get to space? I like to build my own spaceship. I like to explore. So it's kind of I named myself this so that I could, this is what I'm curious about now.
Because names are always really interesting. You know,
I know who Skinner is.
Yeah, I'm Skinner.
I remember Skinner. Okay.
Yeah.
You look at someone's name online and, you know, you identify them with that, but there is something, there's a reason why these people or whomever, and I've thought about this with your name online, Dan, and my own, but you start to think about, like, why, how did this person arrive at that name? And I've, you know, ever since I had kids, I've put a lot more like emphasis on what a name is, you know, and how it affects the person who it's attached to. But I did have one other question, and that was, like, what do you do when you're not Bitcoining or stack chaining, or what's, do you have like a, I'm curious about what's your life like?
Well,
maybe I'm getting too personal. Also,
no, that's all right. I've taken time to refocus because, you know, I didn't just quit my job because I hated to work. It was because I had missed out on nature. I'd missed out on really living my life. So I've kind of reconnected with nature, and I look outside. I spend more time under the stars, sleeping outside, that kind of thing. Trying to
touch grass. You went outside and touched grass.
A lot of grass. Yes. It's really been about touching grass for me, and reorienting instead of chasing a paycheck and saying, because the fiat world's broken, and so what's going to pay isn't really what I want to do in this world. So I thought, I built, you know, I bought a little patch of of woods. I'm building myself just a kind of DIYing my life at this point to, you know, I got a kid.
Give yourself space.
I'm building, you know, I'm building my own space, really.
There you go. Well, cool, man. I have to say thank you. Thank you very much for reaching out to us. And
Bitcoin is not just to save time or to buy the future. You can also use Bitcoin to buy some space.
That's really the point, you know. You know, you can stack as much Bitcoin as you want and die with a bunch of Bitcoin, or you can use it as an opportunity to live your life different.
Amen to that. Cool, man.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I would say the
conversation. Thank you, guys. Yeah. It's been great.
Of course. If people want to find you, where should they hit you up? Or
good luck.
All right, cool.
You know, join the stack chain. Stack a block on the stack chain, and I will follow you. And I will.
If you are meant to be found, you will be found. If you were gonna hang out with Spaceman, you're gonna go to space with Spaceman. Your paths will cross.
We'll create
if you go to the right.
Citadel,
yeah,
together.
If you use Bitcoin and join the community, you'll find them.
Yes, join us.
Cool, dude. I'll cut it. Thank you again for listening to the High Hash Rate podcast with Dan and Mike. If you want to learn more about the podcast and see what we're up to, you can find us at highhashrate.com. Or if you just want to speak to a couple of baked 80 IQ plebs, reach out to us at hello@highhashrate.com. Or you can reach out to us at the High Hash Rate handle on X. Later, everybody.
Holy Toledo!